The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So these days, let's try. Let's see, how's that now? Is that better? Can everybody hear okay? Okay. These last days I've been thinking about a poem by a Japanese Zen monk by the name of Ryokan. And he lived in the 1700s or so in Japan. And he was apparently spent a lot of time living in a small one-room little cabin or hut in the woods, and far away from the trappings of institutional Zen in Japan. Didn't become a great teacher or have a big monastery or a lot of students. And lived kind of a very simple life, they say. Kind of a hermit-like life. And he was also famous for liking to play with the children in the nearby village. And he would play ball with them, and he'd be like a little kid himself. And he wrote poetry about his somewhat solitary life and practice and way of living. And this is one poem. In the still night by the vacant window, wrapped in monk's robe, I sit in meditation. Navel and nostrils lined up straight, ears paired to the slope of shoulders. Window whitens, the moon comes up, rain stopped, but drops go on dripping. Wonderful, the mood of this moment, distant, vast, known only to me. So, on the surface of this poem, it probably was a description of what it was like for him meditating some night in his little one-room hut in the middle of the woods. Apparently, there wasn't much in his hut. There's another poem where he writes of coming home and some robbers have robbed everything that he had in his little hut, and he wrote a poem. The thieves, they left it behind, the moon in the window. So, simple little hut. So here he is meditating in his hut. And it's probably cold, wrapped in his monk's robes. I was a monk in Japan, and I remember sitting in the cold, wrapped in the robes, monk's robes. It was kind of a nice feeling. I sat in a monastery in Japan and during the full moon outdoors in the kind of balcony, porch, overlooking the rock garden. And it's terribly cold, shaved heads, but you're wrapped up in your robe, and it's quite something to be sitting there in the stillness of the night, meditating. And then he describes himself as sitting straight, sitting in zazen, sitting in meditation. Navel and nostrils lined up straight, ears paired to the slope of the shoulders. Meaning he was sitting straight, he was aligned, he wasn't slouching, he wasn't falling asleep. He was really sitting well and strong and stable and present. And then the window whitens, because he's sitting by the window. The window whitens because the moon is coming up. And imagine that out in the woods, that the full moon comes up, it's pretty spectacular to see, and see the light that comes, and it's quite something. And then the rain stopped, so now you find out it's been raining. And he's sitting there, and it's also, I've had the experience of meditating in a small hut in the woods or various places, and the same thing where the rain comes pouring down on these little roofs, and it's quite something to hear clatter of the rain, and I find it very comforting to sit inside when it's raining. You know, I'm dry, and it's really still and quiet outside. There's all this noise and rain and wet, and it's quite comfortable. It's kind of feel very intimate and close and still. Or it's a very nice feeling. But here, the rain stopped. So it has been raining, now it's stopped. But the drops go on dripping. But we still hear, you know, from the eaves or maybe the roof, you hear the rain drops dripping from the roof. And so there's full moon, the sound of the dropping rain, drops water. And then he says, wonderful. How wonderful. The mood of this moment. Distant, vast, known only to me. So there's a kind of strong mood or feeling or sense of sitting there in this beautiful, still, quiet place. And the feeling is one of vastness, of great distance, of no limit perhaps, very open. Even though it's a small, impoverished, one-room hut, and this renunciant who has nothing, the thieves have left everything, have taken everything with them. He doesn't have much left, his robes and his gold probably. But the sense of this great vastness and openness and space and freedom, probably. And then he makes this interesting statement, known only to me. I don't think he means he's the only person in humanity, history, who's ever had experience like that. I think what he means is that it's a very personal, intimate, something that you can only have for yourself. You can't explain it to someone else, or you can't borrow it from someone else. It's something that's personal. It's very personal. So he has this very intimate, personal immediacy of sitting there in the stillness of meditation in the woods with the moon coming up. And it's probably, if you use your imagination, you can kind of imagine a little bit what that experience is like. Maybe you've had something similar. But then, as with many of these Zen poems in Japan, there's the surface meaning, and then there's the symbolic meaning of the poem. And the two go hand in hand. Probably there was an experience like this that he actually had, so the surface meaning is real. But then there's the symbolic meaning of a poem. And so the symbolic meaning is that there might be symbols I don't understand, but the moon coming up is a full moon is a symbol of enlightenment, of awakening. And so when in Japanese poem they talk about seeing the full moon, they're talking about awakening. And one of the most famous uses of the symbol is when the expression, don't confuse the finger for the moon, if you're pointing at the moon. Meaning that if someone talks about awakening or freedom, whatever they talk, the talk itself is not freedom. The description is not it. Don't confuse the finger for the moon. And so here, moon comes up, awakening, freedom, some kind of profound peace surfaces, rises for him. Sometimes it comes with a sense of white. I think one of the reasons why the moon is used is that there can be kind of a sense of a luminosity in the mind that can sometimes occur. And the rain has stopped. And here, the rain and the clouds usually is what obscures the moon. You can't see it. And when it's raining, generally. So in order for the moon to come, the rain has to stop. The clouds have to go away. And so this is all the defilements, all the attachments, all the preoccupations that the mind has. We get caught up, all the ways we get caught up in concerns for the world. All that has fallen, has come to a stop. And you know, it's the rain. The rain's like the weather, comes and goes, so probably it's going to rain for him again. It doesn't, you know, it's not like it stops raining once and for all. But it's settled, it's fallen away, all his concerns and preoccupations of his mind have fallen away. It's a beautiful thing to have a mind, have a heart, which is not caught up in anything, doesn't need anything, doesn't not trying to defend itself or apologize for anything or prove anything or just there. One of the descriptions of an arhat, someone who's fully awakened in the early tradition, is someone who has nothing. Akinshano is the word. Someone who has nothing. So the rain stopped. But because it's a Japanese poem and not an Indian poem, it goes on and it says, but the drops go on dripping. It's not completely there. There's still some little left over, some traces. Something's left over. It's not completely dry. There can be, I mean, a sense of the moon coming up and the rain having stopped, the defilements falling away. But there's still something a little bit left, some traces of that old way, that old karma is still operating. It's still there. And there's a certain humility or a certain kind of, to me, when I read these kinds of Japanese poems, a kind of recognition of a kind of common humanity where we're not measuring ourselves by perfection, that we have to be perfect, which is often the Indian approach, looking for absolute perfection. Japanese are much more willing to live in a human world, which is a little bit not quite perfect. Willing to live with that. And so here the drops go on dripping. And in spite of that, maybe, wonderful, isn't this? To have the mind open and clear and vast and spacious enough that even the imperfections are still there, the defilements are still there, it's okay. There's no need to take them as being, to take them personally or be upset with them or react to them. It just drops. It's just stuff coming and going. And then the mood of this moment. Distant, vast. It's one of the kind of wonderful paradoxes, I think, of sometimes of that you can have a sense of the timeless present. It's timeless, but it's happening now. It's happening at 12:01. How can the timeless happen at 12:01? But the mood of this moment, distant, vast, known only to me. This known only to me, I think, is a very powerful statement. You know, he was alone in his hut, so just no one to share it with, really. But can you really share it with anyone else? Or say it differently. There's no need to share it with anybody else. It's just there. It's so intimate and so present and so complete in itself. It just is what it is. It's enough. So I find this poem kind of evocative and very rich. And it's a kind of poem that sometimes you can kind of reread and reread and kind of get a little different, kind of can raise questions or perspectives of something that's a different way of looking or understanding. In the still night by the vacant window, wrapped in monk's robe, I sit in meditation, navel and nostrils lined up straight, ears paired to the slope of shoulders, window whitens, the moon comes up, rains stopped, but drops go on dripping. Wonderful, the mood of this moment, distant, vast, known only to me. So I hope that all of you will have a chance to sit peacefully, quietly, at the edge of your window at home. And may it be vast, distant, and very personal in a wonderful way. So, thank you.